Welcome to Maleficence, a no BS true crime podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are talking about the suspicious death of Lauren Agee. So summer of 2015 brought a lot of fun for the now 21-year-old Lauren Agee, including her planned camping trip with a childhood friend to Center Hill Lake to attend Wakefest, which was a popular wakeboarding tournament that drew out thousands of people each year. Lauren's mother was nervous about her attending the event, but she was an adult after all, so she gave her extra love and sent her on her way, not knowing that she had a right to worry. The hug would tragically be the last one she'd ever give Lauren. Lauren Taylor Agee was born on August 19, 1993, in Biloxi, Mississippi, to parents Sherry Smith and Brian Agee. When Lauren was a young child, her parents decided to divorce, and Lauren went on to live with her mother, Sherry, but maintained a close relationship with her father, Brian, as well. When Lauren was three, her mother met and eventually married her stepfather, Michael Smith, who she'd become incredibly fond of growing up. Lauren had three siblings, Allison, Jordan, and Joshua, who she loved and cherished. Lauren grew up in Hendersonville, Tennessee. Her family said she was a firecracker. She loved dancing, sports, gymnastics, with multiple medals and trophies to show it. She loved to entertain, and her family said she demanded an audience. She would recreate dances from music videos that she loved, and eventually even went on to dance in an actual music video. She was truly gifted. In high school, she spent 4 years on Hendersonville High's Golden Girls dance team and was eventually awarded a dance scholarship to Bethel University. Although she loved to dance and was incredibly talented, she had other dreams as well. Lauren watched shows like Criminal Minds, Law and Order with her mom and loved trying to unravel the mysteries and even talked about one day working for the FBI. So it was no surprise to her mom when she decided to go to school at Vol State to study criminal science instead of dance.
My kind of girl.
Yeah, absolutely. So summer 2015 was progressing wonderfully, and all of Lauren's hard work was shining through. She had a wonderful boyfriend named Chase, who she was completely in love and smitten with, and her friends said she'd even talked about him being the one. She worked at Vanderbilt as an assistant in the law department and had even just landed a coveted internship with a lawyer there that she was incredibly proud of. Lauren was following her dreams. She was young, fit dancer, incredibly smart, goal-oriented, had a lot of friends, and not to mention she was drop-dead gorgeous. Those that loved her were rooting for her success and very proud of her accomplishments. But as many of us know, leveling up usually brings to the surface those who are not genuinely in your corner, unfortunately. Allegedly, Lauren's success made one of her childhood friends named Hannah feel kind of jealous. But Lauren was down to earth and genuinely a loving person, and she had a ton of love for Hannah. They had known each other since they'd been growing up. Even though people said Hannah would talk behind her back, Lauren still wanted to hang out with her and keep that friendship going. So when Hannah invited her to go to Wakefest with her in July of 2015, Lauren agreed and was excited to spend time with her and her friends at the lake. Now, Wakefest, for anybody wondering, according to their website, is a community outreach event designed to promote the sport of wakeboarding. It's held at Center Hill Lake in Tennessee at Pates Ford Marina. It's one of 9 commercial marinas in the area. It was moved to Pates Ford Marina in 2012 to expand and attract more people, and it did just that. The relocation brought 75 riders and 2,000 spectators, making it one of the largest grassroots tournaments in the Southeast. So it's like this giant party on the water. People have houseboats down there that they'll like tie up to one another in a line to watch the tournament. There's camping, cabins, canoeing. The lake's also known for fishing and hunting. There's even a marina bar.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on.
Yeah, so it's like a huge thing. The area and the event is like very popular and loved by the locals and even celebrities. Apparently, country stars Brooks and Dunn had a houseboat there at some point too. The tournament would last the whole weekend, so Lauren and Hannah's plan was to leave Friday and then return on Sunday. But as I said earlier, Lauren's mom was a little worried. She knew that Hannah had a pattern of only paying attention to Lauren when Hannah's in between boyfriends. And Lauren's mom could tell that Hannah could sometimes feel threatened by Lauren's success, and the friendship just started to make her nervous. But Lauren could take care of herself, so she didn't bother trying to talk her out of going. Lauren told her mom that they would be staying in a cabin at the lake with Hannah's new boyfriend, Aaron, and his friend, Chris. On Friday, July 24th, 2015, Lauren hugged her mom goodbye and hopped in her Jeep with Hannah to start their two-hour drive down to Center Hill Lake in Smithville, Tennessee. Lauren and Hannah documented their drive down there on social media, and they seem to have been having a blast. There's little clips of videos that you can see. It looks like they had a great time. The guys they were meeting up with, Aaron, Hannah's new boyfriend, and Chris, his friend, were set to arrive before the girls and get their spot all set up. We know the ladies arrived Friday as planned, but we do not know a lot of the specific details for that night. It seemed like they had a good evening. They were seen drinking at the marina bar called Fish Lips. I don't know when exactly Lauren found out, but eventually she would come to realize that the sleeping arrangements were not what she told her mom they were going to be. They were not going to be staying in a cabin, but instead they would be camping, which in theory is fine, but this specific area was concerning to say the least. The group would be camping on top of a 90-foot cliff that they would have to canoe across the lake to reach. Once there was a rope that was just tied up to the top that you would use to help climb up the side of this cliff to the narrow campsite at the top.
Why is that even a thing? That sounds absolutely terrible.
Yeah. And they weren't the first people to stay there either. We'll hear in the story that other people had stayed there as well. And I think we have to remember they're like 20, 21. They're going with the flow. They're camping. They're enjoying the... I don't know why, but I just... It seems like people chose that sometimes, and I could never. I'm too afraid.
I could never either.
The campsite itself is sometimes referred to as two campsites in the sources. And the reason why is that the first spot is small. This is where Aaron and Hannah would be staying. And it was just big enough for their tent, like their two-person tent and like a couple camp chairs. Then there's a three-foot gap, like ditch type thing that you'd have to crawl down into, crawl back up the other side to reach the other side or second campsite. And this area was even smaller. And this is where Chris and Lauren would be staying. And they would be sharing a hammock or an Inu, which I guess is just a brand of hammock, but you'll see it both ways. And this hammock was quite literally hanging off the side of the cliff. I will have all of the pictures that I found during this listed, but they would just be dangling off the side of this cliff.
So they're not sleeping in like a tent on the ground?
No, there wasn't room
they're
on this side.
They're sharing a hammock? Mm-hmm. I'm so confused. This arrangement sounds absolutely not enjoyable whatsoever.
No, not at all. And you'll see people argue online that Lauren knew all of this beforehand and just didn't tell her mom. But even if she knew that they may end up camping, I don't think she actually knew the extent of it. Because one, she had a boyfriend. She was never trying to be like a hookup for Chris. She was just kind of Hannah's wingman, so she wouldn't be the only girl. Not only that, she only brought a change of clothes and flip-flops. So she never planned, I don't think, to be hiking up the side of a 90-foot cliff.
Yeah.
She also didn't know this Chris guy at all. This was their first encounter. But Lauren was the life of the party and a chill girl, and it seemed that she just kind of went along with it. She was in it for the story, the experience, and I'm sure she was a bit freaked out. The one side of the cliff was a 90-foot drop-off, as I said. The other side, there's like trees and stuff, and then there's a 30-foot drop-off. So these aren't like clean drop-offs into the water, if that makes sense. The whole way down is trees, bushes, branches, rocks. There's even snakes. So basically, in order for them to even go to the bathroom, they hung a tarp from the side of one of the trees, and they'd have to grab onto a tree and lean back across the cliff to go to the bathroom. So there's not like a lot of room, and it's just trees and bushes and everything on the way down on the side. But somehow they seemed to have made it work at least the first night for Friday night. Seemed like everything went okay. There even is accounts that a couple more people may have stayed up there on Friday night with the group. I don't know where they would have slept, but there is reports that possibly they even had a few extra people on Friday night. The next day, they all head down back across the lake for Wakefest. Lauren ran into some of her other friends that were there attending the event. She spent the day drinking with friends, watching the tournament, and playing on the water. It's later reported that at some point on Saturday, Lauren, Hannah, and some of their other friends decided to go cliff jumping. Apparently in this area, on the lake, it wasn't unheard of. Hannah later states that one of the times Lauren jumped, she landed wrong or somehow hit her head and was possibly unconscious for a few seconds and may have had a concussion. Now, there isn't any pictures or videos or anything of this cliff jumping that you can find online. And in some places, it's stated as though some people believe that it didn't happen. And some other places, it's stated as fact. So take that with what you will. What I do know is later that evening, when they went back to Fish Lips Bar, there were seen on camera and by witnesses drinking and enjoying the evening. And there's video footage of Lauren smiling and waving at the security camera in the bar. She doesn't seem to be injured or disoriented in any way. So if the cliff diving incident did happen, it wasn't too serious that it affected the rest of her evening, at least that people noticed. Some point during the evening, she ran into her friend Cassie, and she had asked about staying on the houseboat that Cassie was staying on, telling her about their sleeping arrangements. And Cassie had previously stayed up on that cliff before and knew how terrifying it was. But unfortunately, there wasn't any room for Lauren to stay on the houseboat that she was staying on. So she wasn't able to offer her like another safe place to go. Lauren was okay with that, and she went ahead and moved on with her life and the rest of her night. And once they wrapped up at the bar, a security guard, who was also an off-duty police officer for another county, named Chris Yardchuk, and he is kind of big in this story, said he saw the group heading down the dock towards their canoes. He spoke with Lauren and stated she was really outgoing. The other people were quiet and everything seemed okay. And they got in those canoes and headed back across the water. Hannah, Chris, and Aaron stated they all decided to go to bed at about 3 a.m. Hannah and Aaron went into their tent, and Chris and Lauren went to bed in the hammock. The next morning, when everyone was waking up, Hannah noticed that Lauren was not in the hammock or anywhere in their small campsites. She asked Chris where she was, and he said he didn't know. He doesn't remember her leaving the hammock or the area, but she had been gone since he had woken up. But all of Lauren's stuff was still lying under the hammock, including her shoes, her keys, her jacket, her phone, basically everything she brought. So it should have been immediately a red flag that she didn't go anywhere on her own, especially if you had to climb down the hill. You at least need your shoes, right?
Right.
But the group recalled her running into an ex-boyfriend and being upset about it the night before. So they all assumed together that she left the campsite on her own to go back to the tournament or even to the houseboat that her ex may have been on. The group never reported her missing and just assumed they'd see her sometime during the day out and about. Or at least that's what they would eventually tell authorities. Meanwhile, it is Sunday, the last day of the tournament, and the day that Hannah and Lauren are supposed to be heading home. Lauren's mom, Sherry, hasn't heard anything from her and is starting to worry. She's also trying to call Lauren's phone, but no luck. She tries the phone number she has for Hannah, but it's not working either. And she's assumed if something was happening or if it's possible her daughter was missing, that someone from the group would find service and reach out to her, but no one ever did. That same afternoon, Sunday, July 26, 2015, at about 4 p.m., a father and son were out fishing on the lake when they saw something bright pink floating in the water near a cove. As they got closer, they could tell it was a body. The son, fisherman, was an EMT and could recognize that whoever was in the water was beyond help at that point, unfortunately. They tried to call for police, but this area is known for bad service, so they headed into the marina office and reached out to the police. The body was not in a well-traveled area, and it was out of sight of their campsite, the tournament, and other people on the water. So the only people that knew of the body was the father and the son who made the discovery, the couple who worked in the marina office who reached out to authorities, and the police. Officer Yarchuk was the first one to head out to the scene to guard the area. And before anyone else knew of the discovery, before the rescue team even made it on the scene, heck, before he himself even made it all the way over to the body, Yarchuk sees Chris and Aaron rowing over in their canoes, yelling at him that that body might be their friend. This stuck out in his mind for a few reasons, one being that the body was literally just discovered, and he was one of only four people at the time that even knew about it. But also, they had never reported their friend missing, nor were there any reports in the area of anybody out looking or searching for a missing friend. So the timing just felt really weird.
And they couldn't see her body, right?
Mm-mm. No, not from where it was located. There's the cliff where they're camping. Behind that is a whole nother part of the river. And towards the left, there's a cove. A little ways further, there's another cove. And she was found in back of that second cove. And oh, when wow. you see the pictures, you're like, there's no way you'd notice that from anywhere on like the shore where they were. So it was just really strange. The timing was just really weird. He asked them what their friend looked like and what she was wearing. And pretty quickly, he concluded the young woman in the water might actually be Lauren. Officer Yarchuk said the cove was out of his jurisdiction, but he did make a few notes to himself when he arrived on the scene. Lauren was floating face down in the water. She had on a black tank top and bright pink shorts. He immediately noticed trauma to her back and shoulders and what appeared to be blood and an injury on the back of her head. Once Lauren was pulled out of the water, there was a couple more things he noticed. There is what appears to be a possible bite mark on her chest, as well as a triangular mark on her abdomen. What he does recommend to investigators is to do a rape kit, just because it visually looks like this whole thing is sketchy. But unfortunately, this is out of his jurisdiction, so the investigation was going to be out of his hands. But he did say, like, hey, this is all weird. You should definitely do a rape kit, like look into this. In a 2020 episode I watched about this case too, the fisherman dad and son who originally found Lauren stated that all he could think when he found her was that someone's lives are about to change forever. Like this little girl that he was looking at is someone's daughter, friend, family, someone loves, and they have no clue in that exact moment that everything was going to change. And that was the most heartbreaking, like, thing I've ever heard. I could tell this discovery truly broke his heart. And he said his son's an EMT, so it didn't shake him quite the same, but he's not. He's a fisherman. He didn't expect to find someone's daughter. And I think this is a good reminder that these types of cases don't just affect the victims or even just their family. They affect everybody around them who love them, who find them, who witnesses anything. It's all just truly, truly heartbreaking.
Yeah, that gave me full body chills because I always think about that. Like, I've witnessed a couple like bad car accidents where the people were fine, and I still think about it today. Like, and they were fine, you know, or like I know they were fine, but it's still, I always think about the people who end up finding these poor bodies, you know, and like how that affects them because we never talk about it. We always talk about the families, which is true, you know, but I always think about how it has to affect the people that find them.
Yeah.
You never expect that. It's like, it's always like that, right? They're just fishing or they're walking down a road and they find a body, you know, discarded on the side of the road, you know, like it's never, you're just expecting to walk and find that. So I can't even imagine myself like that happening to me. I can't even imagine finding that.
I could definitely not imagine either. And you can hear like his voice was like shaky as he was recalling, like you could just genuinely hear, I bet you he thinks about her so often. And it's, oh, I can't imagine.
Yeah.
So Detective Yarchuk and another officer, Ryan Melanson, who is now on the scene, got the guys into their pontoon to ask some quick questions. The officer said that as soon as Chris and Aaron entered into the boat, Aaron immediately starts telling Chris to shut up. He would tell a story, stick to the story, don't talk about anything. The officer said that even when Chris was just kind of chatting about things not related to the case, that Aaron would just tell him to shut up. And that was odd to them. At one point, Officer Melanson said he noticed Aaron was looking, like kind of staring off and looking at his utility belt. And he asked him kind of like, what's up? What's going on? What are you thinking about? And Aaron said he was thinking about getting that gun off your hip and getting off this boat. And Officer Melanson said he told Chris kind of in a joking way, because he like, I don't think he really like knew how to respond to that. He was like, yeah, that's not going to happen. And Officer Yarchuk was like, if you take that gun, we're going to have some serious problems.
And why would you even say that? That is like the weirdest thing to tell an officer when like you're not even being interviewed for anything mm-hmm. right now. Like, weird.
That's what in this case, it's like all the devil's in like all the little details, as far as like there's so many things that are just these little things that are so strange. And you're like, why?
If why did you feel truly, the need to say that?
Yeah, exactly. And he says it again. Aaron mentioned it again a little while later, the same thing. So it's just strange. Hannah, Chris, and Aaron were all spoken with briefly, and then they provided short written statements of what they all said they knew, and then they were released. I wrote their statements down, so I'm going to tell you what they said, because it's already different from what they initially just said about their friend. So Hannah said, last night we were at Pate's Ford Marina. We got into the canoe to go home, the cliff. We got to the top and all went to lay down for bed. Me and Aaron in the tent, and Lauren and Chris were in the hammock. When I woke up in the morning, Lauren was gone, but all of her stuff was still on the campsite. We thought she might be at Wakefest, but she wasn't there. We immediately went to the campsite. When coming back to the dock, she wasn't up there still, but her stuff was. I went to see if she might have been at Pate's Ford Bar and saw that policemen were headed to our campsite area. That's it. That's her whole statement. Aaron said, Lauren, I saw last night when we were coming back from the bar with our group. She had cried about her ex-boyfriend, who I saw the next morning, and had said she tried to make a move on him and he refused. Since he last saw her going to a houseboat, she was last seen by me, I would say, about midnight before Hannah and I got into our bed in our tent at the campsite. This statement is interesting to me because it doesn't seem like much of an account of what he knows about her last movements, and more of a story about her ex-boyfriend and the last time he saw her. He says he last saw her midnight.
Trying to create a story almost.
Yeah, you can see these kind of change. Hannah says, yeah, she was there. She went to bed with us. I woke up and she was gone. Aaron's like, well, I probably saw her at midnight, but also like her boyfriend. And maybe she's at the houseboat. And then
like
Chris
trying
statement,
to put her somewhere else or like remove himself from her even further somehow.
Exactly. And Chris's statement, basically she was never at the campsite. Like she left and we all knew that. Like it's obvious. So Chris writes, and his was really hard to read. He has really messy handwriting. No offense, Chris, but last night, the girl came to our camps. He calls her the girl, too. Last night, the
That's
girl.
That's weird.
Yeah. The girl came to our campsite for a few minutes, saying she was going back to her ex-boyfriend. Hung out very shortly. Then I fell asleep and woke up and she was gone. Talked to her ex this morning, and he said she came back after we left and was trying to get with him the night after we seen her at camp. He said she was trying to make out with him in front of his new girlfriend. Then he pushed her or shooed her away. I can't tell if it's this pushed or shooed. Her away. It's hard to read in his writing, like I said, but that's the official statement. He's basically like, no, she definitely left. She's probably with her ex-boyfriend, but the ex-boyfriend has never confirmed. Like, we know that she saw him at the event, but he denies this ever happening. Like her trying to get with him in front of his new girlfriend or coming to his houseboat or anything like that.
And what does that have to do with her last whereabouts of like going to bed up on the hill?
That's one of the things I think is really weird, is they're basically like trying to distance her from them.
And to call her the girl, like even if you don't really know her, you know her name. Like you laid in a hammock with her.
Yeah.
Like you've been hanging out with her all weekend.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. The written statements were really weird, and I'll post photos of them too, so you can look at how they wrote them, because some stuff is crossed out too, which I think is probably nothing, but just kind of weird to me. I'm like, what are you crossing out
probably
there?
Not nothing. They're probably like, oh, shouldn't say it that way. I got to say it a different way.
Mm-hmm. So the DeKalb County Sheriff's Office took over the investigation and pretty quickly settled on the idea that this was a drunken accident and Lauren fell. After the group was released, they were allowed to go back to the campsite because it was not a crime scene and retrieve all of their belongings, including Lauren's. There was even reports that they had another fire up there before leaving. People noticed that just because it was weird, but they were camping, so a fire might not be strange. But people wonder if they like burned evidence or something.
Or your friend just had a tragic accident and died. Why are you still having a fire and not like grieving mm-hmm. this person? Well, I don't know. I can't imagine just like continuing to camp and live life.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that gets even worse than that, too. So,
oh, gosh.
Meanwhile, the sheriff's office reached out to Sherry. Finally, this is like 12 hours after her daughter's been missing.
Oh, no.
To let her know not that her daughter was deceased, but that there was an accident and she needed to get to the hospital over there immediately. So at first, Sherry's just hoping, whatever it is, that Lauren's going to be okay and they can figure the rest out. But after arriving and having to wait more than 20 minutes, they finally sat her down and let her know that they believed Lauren had a fall, and unfortunately, she didn't make it. Sherry was absolutely crushed. She's immediately asked them, have you spoken with those that Lauren was with for the weekend? The authorities said that they had them all in for questioning, which wasn't entirely true. They got the written statements, but they had never like truly interviewed them. And Sherry had this and left to break the news to the rest of Lauren's loved ones. And even though she felt like something wasn't lining up, she wanted to believe the police knew what they were doing. And if they're saying it's an accidental fall, then she had to go with that for now. But pretty soon she would be questioning everything that she knew about the case, along with many others. Hannah, Aaron, and Chris all refused to speak to the police any further, and none of them even showed up at Lauren's funeral. And remember, Hannah and Lauren were friends since childhood. And Aaron was her brand new boyfriend.
That doesn't make any sense. That's so sketch.
Yeah. Sherry ended up seeing a post on Instagram by Chris, the one that called Lauren the girl, and her hammock mate, that showed photos of Wakefest and was captioned, best weekend ever. Before eventually being changed to Wakefest 2015, went pretty good this year, met some new friends that made it awesome. And it seems he only changed it because Sherry saw it and it went viral.
I don't understand.
Even though she's not your close friend, somebody died. And you were with that weekend. I would think even if you didn't know them, that
would still be traumatic.
Yeah, like even a little like it was a good time except for, you know, this poor event, RIP Lauren. I don't know. I think that's strange, but.
Best weekend ever. Yeah. A girl I was like totally sharing a hammock with died somehow. Yeah. No idea. She was found floating in a river later. Like what?
Yeah. That's what I just think it's so strange. And it's hard for me to like not be biased on this case because I listened, watched, read everything I could on this. So I know all the little things that come after. But I think as this is coming out, this is just the first thing that catches a lot of people's attention as strange. That's just strange, even if
it's like not human. Like, like it's just a human, not like a natural human emotion, right? To like, I don't know, have some sort of reaction if that were to happen to you.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
Just empathy in general.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine what you're going through. I'm so sorry. The very least.
And her friend not showing up to the funeral. That's insane.
So between that post and the call that Sherry would receive from one of the officers at the scene, Ryan Melanson, stating his belief that this was not an accident. So Officer Melanson and Yardchuk were the first ones at the scene. They talked to the boys. They saw the boys coming over. It's not their jurisdiction, so they don't get to investigate it. If it was in their hands, this would have been investigated as a homicide or at least suspected foul play. So that officer reaches out and states his belief that this was probably not an accident. And Sherry knew at this point she had to uncover the truth. And the more you dig into this case, the less the whole accidental fall makes any sense. So Sherry went ahead and hired a private investigator named Sheila Wasaki. And if that name sounds familiar, it's because we talked about Sheila in an earlier episode about Angie Simota's case. Sheila became a private investigator while Angie's case was still unsolved in hopes of helping to solve the case, and she did. She is now one of the nation's leading cold case private investigators and helps families with cases just like this, just like Lauren's, to get answers. She did an entire podcast on Lauren's case, and it's called Without Warning, and Lauren's case is season one, and I highly recommend listening to it. It is mostly all thanks to her work that we get so many details on this case, because to be quite honest, the sheriff's office quit day one. So Sheila was able to visit the spot where Lauren was found and was last known to be camping. And through interviews, experiments, and a lot of footwork, this is what we've come to know from her investigation. There is believed, in her opinion, to be evidence of homicide in this case. For one, there was no evidence of any water in Lauren's lungs. The official cause of death was listed as blunt force trauma and possible drowning. They think she fell off the cliff, got hurt, and drowned, but there is no water in her lungs. There are injuries on Lauren's body that indicate she was involved in a struggle before her death. Those injuries are not consistent with a fall. There were no scrapes or injuries that you would expect if somebody fell down a cliff through trees and bushes, rocks, etc., in shorts and a tank top. So the parts of her body that were uncovered, arms, legs, no scratches.
Especially if she hit those spots hard enough on her head and her back and her shoulder to kill her, you would think that there would be scraping around that from bark and twigs.
Exactly. Just any, I mean, if you've ever fallen down, even just little tiny like grass cuts or anything, she does not have that. There are injuries on her like upper back. And I can post the photo of those too. They're like localized, like very specific. I don't know what they're caused from, but not, like I fell down a 90-foot cliff onto rock or water and didn't
cut your lip, cut your face, like something.
Yeah. So I don't understand how she would not be all scraped up. But there was also, we know Lauren was drinking. There was alcohol present in Lauren's system, and it said she registered twice the legal limit. But Sheila believes that it doesn't take, this doesn't take into account the medically recognized potential for fermentation of alcohol after death. So that can raise the levels in the body. So the reason I think that they care about this is we know she was drinking and partying and probably drunk, but no one witnessed her like out of her mind.
Like obliterate or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was still able to allegedly crawl back up the cliff. You know, she talked to Officer Yardchuk on their way and he was like, yeah, like she'd been drinking, but she wasn't like, you know, concussioned and overly drunk. Sheila also did some tests and experiments, as I stated earlier, and these were some of them. And I got this information from Case Text, and I'll have it linked. In the first test, a body the size of and weight of Lauren was pushed, pulled, and thrown from various locations at the campsite. In no scenario did the body fall into the water after striking the cliffside in such a way that was consistent with the injuries suffered by Lauren. It also never even made it all the way down into the water. Yeah.
Really?
Like I said, there's so much to stop you.
Yeah. You would have been stopped by a tree.
Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't you, like, just a total side note with that, if you had blunt force trauma, like it's kind of, you don't usually just die like instantaneously from blunt force trauma. So wouldn't you roll into the river and keep breathing and have that water in your lungs? And that's how you drown, because you're like unconscious, but like you're still breathing, because you don't usually die instantaneously from that, do you? Like blunt force trauma?
I don't know. I'm sure it probably depends. They don't tell us like, you know, like was her skull crushed? Not to sound
right.
Know. But we don't really know the extent
of that blunt force trauma. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, you have a really good point. If we're, you know, they're assuming that this was all from a fall. If there's enough evidence just to prove that she likely didn't fall, she obviously didn't drown. She has blunt force trauma. We need to find out what caused that.
From what? Yeah.
Yeah. Not even saying it's a specific person. Just like, okay, what is actually likely
a boulder, a tree, like what?
Yeah. So, and in the second test, buoys are placed along the waterfront by the campsite. The currents never carried the buoys to a location where Lauren's body was ultimately found. And that's one of the big things you'll see is there were a bunch of tests from people that follow this case. There's no current in the water. So for her to end up where she did, it doesn't make sense. And even when the wind is blowing, they said like, it's just not the way that it probably would have taken her. A third experiment was conducted with milk jugs filled with water to test the flow of the water to the second cove. The day the experiment was done, the weather conditions were conducive to the jugs reaching the second cove because the wind was blowing in the direction of the second cove. The milk jugs never made it. In fact, they floated back to the bank of the cliff where Lauren was camping. So those are just some things to note. Other things to note. They did not do a rape kit because Lauren was said to have a tampon in, so they didn't deem it necessary. They did not swab her body for DNA or test her for DNA. It was also brought up that Chris, and I think this was in Sheila's podcast, that Chris denied having any sexual encounter with Lauren. But when the police tell him a rape kit will show if that's true, he changes his story and says they did have sex, but it was consensual. So that's a red flag itself. I don't know why that wasn't taken more seriously.
That's a huge discrepancy.
Mm-hmm.
First, like, he calls why are we the not girl, questioning that? Yeah.
Yeah. Says that she wasn't even there. And then it was like, well, maybe we didn't have sex. Well, okay. Well, I guess if you can tell that we did, then we did. But it was fine. That's just weird.
Like, why would you lie about that if it wasn't important? Like, oh, man.
So Sheila speaks with Officer Yardchuk, and he brings up the fact that it was clear it wasn't a case of drowning. Usually when someone drowns, their body takes in water and they will sink. It takes days before the body will start to produce gas from the bowels and the stomach that will cause the body to float back up to the surface. And by the time it floats back up to the surface, there is usually a good amount of bloating and decomposition that happens from being in the water. This was not the case for Lauren. We know for sure that she was seen by Yarchuk himself at 2:30 a.m., so she wasn't in there for a few days. And when she is found in the river, she was not bloated, and the medical examiner said there was no signs of water in her lungs. So drowning just seems completely out of the question, or even being alive once she got into the water, like you said.
Yeah.
So let's assume that she did fall off the cliff. As we stated before, how would she end up so far away from camp if there's no current and the wind's not going to take her all the way there? I will try to post some pictures of the cliff and the lake itself, but try to imagine that they're on a cliff where they're camping. Behind that, there are two coves, but there are ways down. So there's a whole backside of the lake, and then a ways down, there is one cliff, and then one a little further away, as I said, a second one to the left. That's where Lauren was eventually found. So it seems more likely that somebody might have taken her over there to try to hide her body, as opposed to her naturally floating over there, since all of the experiments, and it just doesn't fit right.
Right.
It was also stated in some of the sources that it looked as though she was redressed by someone else. So her clothes were haphazardly on. Her bra wasn't clasped all the way right. Like, it looked as though she had been redressed. That's noted several times. And that was part of the reason that Yarchuk had even originally recommended a rape kit. Now, one thing that Officer Yarchuk spoke about as well was the fact that Lauren had a triangular mark on her upper abdomen, like chest area, like kind of right below where your breasts are. And it was in the shape of a triangle. And he believes that it appeared to be lividity. Now, lividity is a purplish discoloration of the skin after death. And it occurs when the blood pools at the lowest point of the body due to gravity. And it's a sign of liver mortis. So the reason why this is important is Lauren was found face down in the water. But that doesn't explain that perfect angular mark on her abdomen. There's nothing in the water that would have been able to do that. So she would have had to have been dead laying on something for a while before going into the water, something with a perfect angle. Yarchuk believes it's from a canoe. And if you look at the photo, which I definitely will post, you'd see why he thinks that. Is it possible that she was laid atop of a canoe for some time during or before the possible transit to dump her body in the cove? During her investigation, Sheila also noticed the changing stories from the group Lauren was with. So Hannah herself told like three different stories. Sunday before Lauren was found, she mentioned to mutual friends that Lauren had just left early. Then when police found Lauren, she stated that she believed she must have fallen while trying to use the restroom. She said her keys or phone or shoes were all left behind and Lauren wouldn't leave anywhere without those things. But in a later statement, she said she didn't report her missing or worry too much because she thought that Lauren had left to go over to the houseboats to see her ex-boyfriend. Which is what her, you know, boyfriend and friend were saying. But it's like, girl.
Which is it?
Yeah. Which, what is it? Also,
and
what
you
about
would be able, I was just going to say, you would be able to tell too if she was like leaning over trying to go to the bathroom because her pants would have been down when she was found. Like,
yeah. And she would probably ended up somewhere in the bushes or on that side. That's true.
Yeah.
That's a good point. But not only that, but your very first statement when you're talking about your friend is she would never go anywhere without her keys, her phone, her, you know, whatever. And then now you're like, yeah, I didn't worry about it because she's probably with an ex-boyfriend. But like, yeah, what about her phone, her keys, her shoes, the only shoes she brought?
She just left without those things? No.
Yeah, there's just too many inconsistencies and, yeah, red flags in this whole story.
And was she distraught at all? Like, she's been friends with this girl since childhood. Like, it's not like the guy, Chris, where he's like, oh, yeah, the girl, I just met her. You know, mm-hmm. Maybe, sure, okay, whatever. You weren't impacted. Okay. This Hannah girl, you've known her personally, intimately for so long. Like, you're not, no tears? Was there no tears? Was there no nothing?
No, that's one of the things that's brought up a lot is it just didn't seem like any of them were grieving her or sorry or... They didn't reach out to anybody or anything like that. And it's just strange. You're right, because she has a history with her. So with this whole thing, an accidental fall would be the easiest answer, but it just doesn't line up with the evidence. Both of the officers first on the scene suspect there's way more to the story than an accidental fall. In 2021, Sherry Smith filed a $10 million wrongful death lawsuit against Hannah, Aaron, and Chris. I'm sure part of this was to try to get them to talk. As I said, they lawyered up. They refused to help or to say anything. But unfortunately, instead of finding the truth, all three of them used their Fifth Amendment rights and kept quiet. Aaron and Hannah eventually got married shortly after Lauren's death, and many wonder if it was to keep them from ever having to testify against each other, because remember, they were brand new dating, and then within a few months after Lauren's death, they're married. So eventually a judge ruled that there wasn't enough evidence to move forward against Hannah in the wrongful death lawsuit, so she was dropped from the suit. And from everything else that I could find so far, it looks like the other two are still pending, but there is still a lawsuit. Hannah was supposed to be one of Lauren's best friends. She's known her since childhood. And if you didn't do anything, why not cooperate? Why not go to the funeral? Why not even just reach out to her mom? Why protect your new boyfriend instead? During the investigation Sheila was doing, it came out that investigators never interviewed really anybody. They didn't reach out to the people that worked at the marina. They didn't reach out to witnesses, to friends. Even one of Aaron's ex-girlfriends, who was at Wakefest that weekend, tried to share with police her experience with Aaron and domestic violence, offering photos of her injuries. And there was even a report that was filed for the domestic violence against each other that was dropped, but they were not interested. They just didn't care. And I think Aaron had a history of being violent, and that's what was important. Not that, you know, their domestic dispute had to do with Lauren.
Right.
But multiple people knew that Aaron could be violent. Chris also had a long rap sheet of his own, a lot of DUIs and other things. And shortly later, he ended up locked up for unrelated charges. So they weren't completely innocent guys. Those close to the case, including Officer Yarchuk and Melanson, believed that their actions were strange. The moment they arrived at the body, it seemed like they were surprised it was found already and were trying to backtrack and save themselves. And Aaron kept saying, let me do the talking, stick to the story. And they all worried up immediately and refused to help with the case.
Did he actually say the words stick to the story out loud?
Yeah. So there's an interview, and I don't know if Sheila did it herself, but it's in the podcast of Hannah. And Aaron calls her while they're having the interview and says, stick to the story. So he's maintained that. And that itself, I just feel like, is a big red flag. There shouldn't be a story if nothing happened, even if they didn't intentionally try to harm her. I don't know why we're still acting like there isn't at least something to be looked into.
Yeah. Because even if it was accidental, right? Like, you were all drunk, she did fall, and then for some reason, because you were drunk, you panicked. So then you put her in the water to make it look like an even bigger accident. Like, okay, but it's sketch. All of it is sketch. You know, not even saying that these guys are, you know, like I said, purposefully, like, they all tried to rape her and like kill her, you know, like, even if it was an accident, like, why are you guys all trying to like cover? I don't know. It's weird.
It's weird. And I wish we had more answers. I wish they couldn't use the Fifth Amendment right. I hope her mom wins wrongful death lawsuit or something.
I hope so, too.
I'm also hoping that it's been 8 years now, over 8 years. Like, loyalties could change to anybody.
Oh, yeah.
If Hannah knows something, if Aaron knows something, or someone's covering up for somebody, like, that might change at some point.
Yeah, we've seen that happen like 20 years later. Mm-hmm. And then they finally, you know, something happens and they snitch on one another.
Yeah, I hope something. Or there's even a petition. There's a petition listed online to reopen the case. And I will post the link if you want to sign it. I signed it. But Lauren's family is still working to get justice and answers. Sheila has done so much work on this case to help bring attention and to point out inconsistencies and just try and get them to take another look. There is enough that shows the theory they had doesn't match. At least see if you can truly find out what happened. This case needs all the attention it can get, and hopefully one day we'll know more about that fateful night. Lauren's poor family cannot even begin to process and grieve fully without answers. They're just fight or flight. Even if it's an accident, like we said, even if it, you know, was, you know, truly something that the friends didn't do, we need to know what happened, and we need to have an investigation into what the evidence shows and not what the stories are. I don't know that makes sense, but the body is showing that something else happened, and why are we not finding out what that is?
Yeah, and that's what I'm kind of curious, like, what has the sheriff's office put out about it? Because a lot of time when we talk about suspicious or mysterious deaths, you know, they're like, hey, here's the info. This is why we're not reopening it, right? Like they try to like clarify like what they fully believe, but it sounds like they're not doing anything like at all. Like they didn't even investigate it. So do they like what evidence do they have pointing to the fact that it was an accident?
So from what I gathered in the medical, and that is all the factual information I have on the case, so we could totally speculate now. But yeah. From what I gathered with the medical examiner's report was because she was found in the water, she had trauma to her body. They were assuming it was a fall, and the medical examiner put in there part of the story that Aaron and Chris said about her like leaving, you know, she was drunk, like basically made the story and was like, yeah. I couldn't find the actual report, but I'm telling you, you have to listen to Sheila's podcast because she talks about the medical examiner coming up with the story when that's not even their job.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I found. This is what they said. So definitely probably an accidental fall, but they just ruled it an accident. And I think I can understand, like, they find her in the water, originally thinking maybe this is a drowning, like you're on a lake, people are drinking, that's plausible. Right. But as that information came back, no water in the lungs, the blunt force trauma, the, you know, the strange marks and lack of scratches from possibly falling down a cliff, why that didn't immediately kind of reroute that whole train of thought to maybe there's more. There's tons of people there. Maybe it wasn't even somebody that she was with. I mean, it could have been anything. And maybe that's why they don't want to look into it. Maybe they don't think they'll get answers. I don't know.
Yeah, because that's what's surprising to me, too, because there's two officers that are saying, hey, we were here. This doesn't add up. So it's not like there's this like one cuckoo officer that's like, oh, conspiracy theory. You guys need to reopen this case. But there's like two coherent officers that are like, hey, this doesn't add up. Like, why are they not listening to them? That's what I don't understand. Yeah. Like, how have they not reinvestigated this case?
Exactly. And it was like they were so close, like two officers were there. And if it was their jurisdiction, they could have had a say in it. Like they were so close to like being able to be on the right track for truly investigating it, but so far away because they could recommend like, hey, this looks suspicious. Like these boys came canoeing up seconds after the body was even discovered.
And said that they want to take my gun off my hip. Yeah. And run what? Like what?
Yeah. Especially because they said they got the feeling that, you know, in theory, if she was put over there, say by the people she was with, you know, I'm not saying that's what happened, but maybe they thought that like that, because that area is out of the way of all the activities and campers and water. So they were probably hoping that she would get dropped off there. They probably thought she would sink. And he mentions that if she was on her back, she probably would have gotten water in her mouth, eventually would have sunk, and then we'd have to wait for her to come back up. But because of the way she was positioned in the water, she didn't sink. So that kind of plays a role in it too. But since they probably think that since she was dropped off there, they were trying to hide her, hope everybody would go home. And then eventually when she was found, they wouldn't have anything to do with them, or they could at least get alibis by then. But right. She was found so quickly. And as soon as they saw the officer heading over that way, they just started canoeing. They didn't even know.
Like, why would you even go?
Exactly. They kept saying that body could be our friend, but he wasn't even all the way to the body yet. They knew,
like, we
the
didn't
body
even
was
know
there.
There was a body. Well, yeah. Like, how do you know it's your friend if you don't know that there's a body there? Because if it hasn't like spread like wildfire yet, like, oh my God, they found a body over there. Like, how would you know officers are going over there because they found a body? Like, you wouldn't know that unless you knew there was a body over there.
Yeah. And Officer Yarchuk was like the first person to find out about it because the worker at the marina that reached out to police asked him to go guard the body so that nobody would like touch it or whatever. So The fisherman found it. Officer Yarchuk goes out there to guard the body before he even gets all the way to where they tell him it is. Those boys are already like, that could be our friend. And he's like, what?
Like, what? That doesn't make any sense because I'm like putting myself in their shoes. Like, if I'm at a party and my friend's kind of like, I don't know where she's at, you know, I think she went off with her ex-boyfriend or whatever, and I'm just like partying. If I see like cops start to like go somewhere, I'm gonna be like, ooh, someone got in trouble. My first thought isn't gonna be like, oh my God, there's a body. Like, I don't think I've ever thought that when I've seen officers go somewhere. I don't think I've ever thought that.
No.
So that being your first intuition and to go over there to try to like intercept them, that's so weird.
Yeah. Well, and the fact that he was on security detail. So people had seen him around doing security. So I would more just think like, oh, he's just cruising around the lake, like a security check. Like I wouldn't even know that I would think anything more than that. But Yeah.
It's but just, to know there's a body, it ain't adding just, up for me.
Yeah. It's all strange. Like, their written statements are really short. And Hannah says, like, I went to bed, they went to bed, she wasn't there. And I'm like, if everybody just said that and that was their natural story, like, I could believe maybe she went somewhere. But, and then you can see the transition where Aaron's like, well, we did see her, she came back, but also, like, don't forget her boyfriend, she was all upset and crying. And the way he talks about her in the interview that's also in the podcast is like, he keeps redirecting back to that, like, you know, she's all crying over her boyfriend. And then I found out that, or her ex-boyfriend, then I found out that she had a boyfriend. And, like, you know, he was like trying to make her, you know, like, she's like my ex-girlfriend, a crazy ex-girlfriend. Like, he was just talking about her, like, trying to make her seem unhinged, it felt like, for no reason. Like, he wasn't talking about the specifics. I want to know, like, where was she when you
went to sleep,
laid down? Did you hear anything? That's the kind of stuff you expect from the statement. Like, I didn't hear anything. I didn't hear someone fall or scream.
I didn't hear her leave. I didn't hear the canoe. Like,
yeah, exactly. And then
have they said, like, what they believe have happened? They believe that she, like, because obviously they thought, like, in the beginning, okay, yeah, she probably went off with her boyfriend. But once the body's found with, like, trauma, or they just think, you said that Hannah changed her story like 3 times.
Yeah. So at first she was like, I was scared she might have fallen going to the bathroom. That was her first thing. And then that whole boyfriend thing started. So they're like, oh, I just thought she went over there. But they stopped talking to police. I think Sheila, they haven't said anything. And Sheila was able to interview Hannah. And she kind of says the same thing, a mixture of both of those things as far as, you know, she didn't have her keys or phone or whatever. I was like worried about her and I didn't know if she needed me, but they don't go into any more detail. They have a surface story and it's just been
that. You obviously weren't worried because once you went back to the party and realized that she wasn't there, you didn't tell anyone that she was missing.
Yeah.
With no shoes and phone.
I think that's the thing, is their story was probably going to be, it sounded like what they were going to say at first from how it unfolds was just that she wasn't there when they woke up. But then when it's brought up that they never reported her missing and like her shoes or keys or phone, like anything that a normal person would take with them was not there. Then they were like, well, now we got to throw in a reason why we wouldn't have reported her missing. And it turned into the whole boyfriend thing. And that ex-boyfriend declined, but they never interviewed the ex-boyfriend either. The police never went and were like, hey, did she try to hook up with you? Like, do you think she was coming back to see you? Like, nothing. They didn't talk to him.
See, and that's the frustrating thing about this case, and this is just me being very bold, but I feel like this is a super easy solvable case, and because the police department is choosing not to investigate it, it's not being solved.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, it's so clear. Maybe, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm not an investigator, but it's very clear that all of this does not make sense, and like, things need to happen. Like, you need to do your job. And this is what's so frustrating to me about suspicious and mysterious cases, is like, I think every case should be investigated until you can completely rule it out. Isn't that like true crime 101? Is like, investigate it until it's officially ruled out, like suicides. Investigate it until you can officially rule it a suicide. Act like it's a homicide until you rule it differently. And they didn't even do that. They were just like, meh, kind of tired today. There's a lot going on with this wake fest. We're just going to leave it be.
I think that's the problem, is like, we are dealing with like actual like human beings and human error and like got tunnel vision. And for some reason they were assumed it was an accidental fall. And I think then they began treating it that way instead of a just in case rope off the crime scene, just in case, like, you know, take the photos. There's some photos of stuff, but not like a lot. Like, instead of just in case treating it like a homicide, they treated it immediately like an accidental fall. And now I wonder if they're just like too scared to go back because of how much, if it's ruled a homicide, they butchered this. Like, they butchered it. I didn't take finger, but like her body, like none of that. Like,
because like, even if she was on top of this cliff, which I need to see the pictures, but and did like stumble around and fall, like, wouldn't there maybe be like skid marks where her feet were falling and you could tell which part of the cliff she fell, right? Like, they didn't even do that and like allow for that to happen, to be like, okay, like, look, here, we can tell the ground is really disturbed here, she tripped, she fell, whatever, she tried to like catch herself. Like, there's none of that because they didn't do the due diligence. And that's super frustrating. I can't even imagine her poor family, like how frustrated I am right now. I'm just, the first time I've heard this case, like, her poor family has to be so, I can imagine like being frustrated because you feel like you can see some answers, and feeling betrayed because you put all of your trust in the authority of the police department to do their job. And it's like, you're not doing your job. Like, we're not allowed to do our jobs. Like, even if they get all this evidence from the private investigators, a lot of that stuff doesn't hold up in like court and things like that. So now we're trying to do our due diligence because you're not willing to do your due diligence. And even if we do find answers, we can't really do anything with it. It's just for us. But it's like, that's like how frustrating to be in that position. Yeah.
And that's so true too. And I think Sheila's uncovered a lot. You know, there's been people that have tried to, like you said, like she can't just make an arrest. She can give that stuff to the officers and investigators, but if they're refusing to acknowledge anything foul play, then what? Because she's uncovered things where like somebody came forward at some point and said the night, like after they had all went back, so like 4, 5 in the morning, somebody was swimming across the lake to the dock from like their area and was like, oh my gosh, I almost drowned. Like they swam really far and came out of the water. And this person was like, it was Aaron Lilly. Like he came swimming up to the dock randomly from like over towards the area where their campsite is and where she was found. And he's like, it was Aaron Lilly. So like they tried to tell the police like, hey, just so you know, this happened. Like if he said he was sleeping all night, like I know that he came swimming up, you know, really early in the morning. Like that's just a weird thing. But the police, like, they just weren't interested.
Oh, that's so frustrating.
Yeah. So there's just a lot of little things. If you look into this case, you'll see why, you know, other than the stuff that I laid out, why everybody's just kind of like, this is just not right. It's just not.
There's too many inconsistencies to just close it and say, no, we're not going to look at it. Like there's way too many inconsistencies for that.
Oh, I really hope that. Yeah. I hope her family gets answers. And also like, what a goddess Sheila Wysocki is.
Dude.
Like
for real.
She's out here
doing the Lord's work, let me tell you.
I'm like, listen, I was so impressed with her when I did the research for Angie Simota's case and like her reading her interview, but I had no idea. There's other cases she's working on that I got roped into while I was looking into this. And a lot of them are like suspicious or strange deaths. But she's just out here. She's traveling all over. She's like doing one in Tennessee, doing one in Texas, going back and forth, spending all her time. Like,
that's just amazing.
Trying
she
to
found
families.
Her purpose through that. Yeah. Yeah. That's so crazy. I didn't know that either. I thought that was kind of like a one and done with her friend Angie.
Me
so
too.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
What a baller. Man, I hope her family gets answers. We'll have to do a follow-up once the court case is done, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone, I'll go, if we can link the petition and I'll go sign the petition, of course. And then, you know, there's a lot of power in what we do here with these podcasts. So if everyone listening can go sign the petition, if you feel, you know, these inconsistencies with us, you know, want to reopen this case, maybe we can make an impact and, you know, bring some awareness to this case and hopefully get the sheriff's office. Because again, too, like sometimes it happens, like you said, with the changes in police departments. So once this generation phases out, not saying it needs to be like 10, 20, 30 years, but maybe whoever is handling these cases right now phases out and someone new comes in. Or a district attorney, you know, brings awareness to this case and they're like, hey, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. And the only way that's going to happen is if we bring awareness and noise. Yeah. So I think signing that petition could really help the family out and hopefully getting the case to the right hands.
Yeah. I'll link all the photos too. There is a ton of photos that I stumbled across researching this, and I think they all help. You know, I'm trying to paint you like a word picture to like view it all in your mind. But once you see the photos, once you see like how big the lake is and like where the cove is and how many injuries are on and not on her body,
it's going to frustrate me even more.
Yeah. You're just like, how is that possible? Especially that possible canoe mark, like the little vitty. There is a photos of that where they kind of highlight it to show you, and you can see like how it just naturally is. That's a big thing too. I feel there's also, they were saying that the injuries on her back possibly could have been from being drug from somewhere, maybe into the water or drug into the canoe or something. So I don't know. It's just, it is very, the whole thing is very curious. Very, I feel like we know what happened, but we also have no idea at the same time.
Right. And the sad truth is that it sounds like these three people are the ones that have answers and they're not willing to give them.
Yeah. And Aaron and Hannah like got married, like I said, a few months later and then left off to like Florida and like started a whole new life. And Chris, I think, is still locked up or was for a while. So I don't know.
Man, what a sad case. You can find sources for this episode in the show notes. To view photos about the case, check out our Instagram at Maleficence Podcast. Thank you for listening to Maleficence. If you like the show, make sure to leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts and share with your friends. Then follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Maleficence Podcast. We'll see you next Friday with a brand new episode.